This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasothi. In our health and living segment today, Dr. Chang Kien Meng, consultant hematologist from Sunway Medical Center. Interesting topic today. It's all about stem cells. I have a lot of questions for you, Dr. Chang, only because there's so much out there as far as stem cells is concerned. The only two things I know. One is there's still a lot of progress to be made in this field.
Definitely.
And there would seem like there are a lot of claims that stem cells are able to heal and cure a lot of things when in fact it is slightly questionable. So I would love it if you can actually shed more light on this. Let's start with this discussion. What are they? What are stem cells? You know, we hear of fruit stem cells. We hear of animal stem cells, which we are consuming. But do we have stem cells ourselves?
Thanks, Meera. Well, first of all, let me qualify. I'm currently still in the Ministry of Health in Hospital Ampang. I'm a consultant hematologist there, and I'll be assuming a new position in Sunway Medical Center soon. Yes, stem cells have been much talked about. Some of it are hype, some of it are facts, and some of which are, of course, caused a lot of excitement because of its potential. Generally, if you look at the human body is made up of tissues and organs. So we have muscles, we have organs like liver and kidneys and bone marrow. So these organs are made up of cells, all right? So we have liver cells, we have kidney cells, but these are mature cells. These are cells that must have come from a certain source. So the source of all these cells are really the mother cells, or what we call the stem cells. All right, so the stem cells are the cells which are able to mature and differentiate into these various cells, and which make up these various organs. So we define stem cells as having cells which has two capacity. One is the capacity to differentiate and mature into functioning cells. And of course, these stem cells must also have the capacity to self-regenerate or to replicate. Otherwise, stem cells would just exhaust, right? Mm-hmm. So in our body, all our organs and tissues, the cells must have come from a common source, and these are stem cells.
Okay, so I'm going to refer to it as the mother cell, actually.
Yes.
In my head, it makes a lot
yes.
more sense. So what you're saying is the mother cells need to regenerate.
Yes.
In order to continue to have different and differentiate and have more mature cells in the body.
It must be able to regenerate, to self-replicate, so that we don't run out of stem cells. At the same time, some of these cells must be able to mature and make make mature cells.
Okay, so would you say the one objective of the stem cell is to?
The one objective is to regenerate, to make cells.
Okay.
So in the human lifetime, our cells face various stresses, injuries, cell death. All right. Our heart undergoes a myocardial infarct, so mm-hmm. we lose cells. So we need to repair and regenerate new cells.
Okay. So when that process happens, when the repair needs to happen, then the mother cells start to produce.
Yes, they mature into new cells.
Okay, to help with healing.
To help with healing and regeneration.
Okay. Mm. And how many percentage of our cells are actually stem cells?
Probably very little. Like, for instance, in the liver, in the brain, and in the heart, they are there, but they are in very, very small quantities. And possibly that may be the reason why our ability to regenerate is less as we grow older, because obviously they run out in one way or another. The stem cells that are most active in the human body are really in the bone marrow, and this makes our blood stem cells. So some of the organs have more stem cells, like the bone marrow, the skin, the gut. But some of the other organs, the cells are there, but they are much more difficult to isolate or to get it out.
Okay, so bone marrow, muscles?
Bone marrow, basically bone marrow, the skin as well as the gut.
Okay. Mm. Roots of our teeth?
Yes, definitely. But it's not easy to get, but it's there and it's been used, yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And of course, we always hear of embryonic stem cells. Mm. Would you like to explain to us what that is?
Well, yes, embryonic stem cells is really the mother of all cells, all right? This is the first cell that that is the source of other various stem cells. So we divide stem cells into two big groups. One are the embryonic stem cells. The embryonic stem cells are when the human egg or the oocyte gets fertilized. All right, that fertilized egg is called a zygote, and then it undergoes division into the first few cells. And those are the embryonic cells. All right, so those cells are the ones that really have the capacity to make any kind of cells. Then later on in its maturation, these stem cells become more committed, meaning that they become more bone marrow type cells, or more liver type cells, or more muscle type cells, or skin type cells, or stem cells. So we call those adult stem cells. So if you look at stem cells, essentially there are two large groups. One are the embryonic stem cells, and the other group are the adult stem cells.
Okay. And, you know, sometimes as a hematologist, right, how do you apply this, knowing that this is how it works and this is how stem cells work? Where are the applications in your line of work?
Currently, the clinical applications are mainly where the stem cells are most easy to get. They're easy to isolate. And as I said, the bone marrow is really the one that is the most easy resource to get. But these are committed stem cells, or what we call adult stem cells. So the function of the bone marrow stem cells are to make blood, essentially. That is the most important component. So, and that is what we use the bone marrow stem cells for, essentially to correct bone marrow problems like leukemias, blood cancers, and immune deficiencies. This has been done for the last 50 years, and it's a very well-established treatment.
How do you identify the stem cell from, other blood cells, for an example?
It's difficult. No one has really seen stem cells.
You haven't?
No one knows stem cells, So I think it's really been seen really in the mouse. But in human beings, if we take a bone marrow sample, we are not able to see the stem cells with the naked eye. But the stem cells has certain characteristics on its surface of the cell, which we are able to detect by doing more specialized methods. One is using what we call flow cytometry for its antigen expression, that is a certain protein that is expressed on the surface of the cell membrane. And by using this specialized method, we are able to identify that they are there, and we're able to count it, but really we can't see it with the naked eye.
Okay, so let's just say leukemia, right? You need a bone marrow transplant, am I correct?
Yes.
So what do you do?
So what we do is that we will, first of all, get rid of all those leukemia cells, so the patients would undergo chemotherapy, and after that we would replace those stem cells. Because the thinking is that these stem cells may be genetically defective. Some damage has happened to the DNA of these stem cells. So we would try to identify someone who is a match with the patient, all right, whereby the patient will not reject those stem cells. Mm-hmm. So this matching is this method of matching is doing what we call HLA typing.
Okay.
So the human being is truly a very fantastic system, whereby we have evolved a mechanism to recognize what is our own and what is not our own, and we do this by the immune system known as the HLA system. All right, with this mechanism, our immune cells are able to recognize what is our own and what is not our own.
What is the enemy?
Right, recognize ourselves, yes.
Okay.
And then anything which is not matched with this HLA immune system, we reject, or we eradicate, or we kill. All right. So first of all, we do what we call a HLA matching. And if they are HLA matched, then they can potentially be the stem cell donor. So we would isolate the bone marrow, or now today we isolate the blood. And then once we get this isolate of bone marrow or blood, we do a cell counting using this special technique that I said to identify the stem cells. Mm-hmm. This is, we do what we call CD34 counting, and that would tell us roughly how many stem cells, how many blood or bone marrow stem cells we have.
Okay.
And we use that to infuse back into the patient as a transplant procedure.
Okay, from the donor.
From the donor.
And hoping that this stem cell will go in and start to replicate and
yes, these stem cells are quite remarkable. It has a homing mechanism. It will go in and home back into the bone marrow because it knows that's where it belongs.
Right.
All right, so it has certain characteristics on its surface that makes it stick connective tissue or the stroma of the bone marrow. This is where it calls its home, and that's where it will home in and it will start making new cells.
Okay. Amazing, isn't
amazing,
it?
Amazing, yes.
Yeah, I'm sure you enjoy yourself doing
it's remarkable, the human system.
Yes, absolutely. Have you done any research on stem cells, and have you found anything interesting?
We currently are embarking in some more clinical style research, whereby we use cells to sort of reduce rejection, what we call graft versus host or graft rejection. There are certain cells, stem cells in the bone marrow and blood population, what we call the mesenchymal stem cells, which may be able to down-regulate or downplay the immune system so that we don't get so much rejection.
Okay, all right then. And when you talk about stem cells, so for leukemia, in other areas?
We can replace red cell defects like thalassemias. We can also do stem cell hematopoietic stem cell transplantations for immune deficiencies.
Okay.
Those are the main areas for blood disorders immune disorders.
Okay. Yeah. What about other than blood disorders?
Well, newer in the therapies, of course, are investigators who have done for corneal repairing, all right, for skin wound healing. Those are more established. The rest are still largely in clinical trials, like, for instance, in cartilage injury. Some which are very, very early in still research are in neural disorders, spinal cord injuries, and neurodegenerative disorders.
Okay. I mean, there was a paper published last month in the journal Heart Circulation that reported patients who received intravenous stem cell infusion, and they showed improved heart functions that lasted almost a year long. Now, what is that? What's happening there?
Yeah, so generally, before any treatment comes into an accepted practice, it has to undergo years of research. And if we look at how drugs or medications get approved or licensed for therapies, they would have been tested on thousands of patients. And generally, it takes about 10 to 15 years before it comes into clinical applications. Now, the issue with stem cells is that they are hard to regulate because they are not truly drugs. So investigators have been using it as part research and part maybe as therapy. So there are some indications that the use of these stem cells may help the healing, more rapid or more quicker healing of injured tissues like the heart, for instance. So it still has to undergo very rigorous clinical trials, you know, to see whether it actually is better than the routine standard of medical care. There is some signals to say that definitely after a myocardial infarct or after a heart attack, the use of stem cells may promote the recovery. Whether it is the stem cells that are promoting the recovery or whether there are substances or growth factors within these cells that help recover the heart, at the moment is still unclear.
Okay, what is the challenge actually? We'll come back and find out more as to why you don't know whether it's really the stem cells or not. Is it because, you know, as you said, you can't see it with the naked eye? Is there still a lot that we don't know about stem cells? But what I really want to know when we come back is, you know, we hear of goat placenta, we hear of rabbit stem cells, we hear of vegetable stem cells, which some of us actually take as supplements. How does that work, you know, with the human body is what I want to know coming up next. If you have a question, give us a call. The number is 03-77-109-1000. You can tweet BFM Radio or WhatsApp 01-8789-8899. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I am Mira Sivasothi. Our Health and Living segment today, we have Dr. Chang Kian Meng, consultant hematologist, joining Sunway Medical Center next month. We're discussing the potential uses of stem cells. Dr. Chang has a huge passion for this area. I mean, earlier on, we spoke about, you know, how these stem cells are the mother cells and how they help they regenerate and become adult cells. And, you know, we need it. We need it for fixing, curing, treatment, that sort of thing within the body when we have injuries and you know, wherever there is cell death, I suppose. Nowadays, stem cells applications are far and wide. A lot is being said. If you just Google stem cells, you'll see tons and tons of articles claiming a whole lot of things. But Dr. Chang has shed more light on hematology as a hematologist and how it helps with blood disorders, leukemia being one. You did say there's potential with the cornea, with cartilage, probably even with the brain at some stage. You know, when it comes to the cornea or the cartilage or the brain, for an example, what do you actually do? Do you still take the bone marrow and then the stem cell from the bone marrow and then, you know, sort of use it in the cornea or in the brain or in the cartilage? Is that what happens?
Yeah, that is the limitation of using the bone marrow or the blood stem cells, because these are really what we call adult cells. They are already committed to making blood. So the question that often investigators ask, are they still able to... do they have what we call plasticity? Are they able to move beyond the barriers of making blood and be turned back to make nerve cells or muscle cells? And I think the potential for that is really limited. And that's why investigators have been finding stem cells which are less committed. And we, from the start of this program, we said there's another group of cells which are called embryonic stem cells.
Yes.
These embryonic stem cells came from the fertilized egg. And in the early stages of cell division, the first few cells, and then subsequently when they form what we call a blastocyst. And these are the cells that will be the source of all stem cells. All right, liver stem cells, muscle stem cells, nerve stem cells. So if any stem cell that would have the potential to make any kind of cell, it would have been the embryonic cells, as embryonic stem cells. The issue with using embryonic stem cells, of course, are the religious and moral implications with using embryonic stem cells, because it came from the human egg and it's a fertilized egg.
And it is present in the umbilical cord?
No, this is... usually it's from the donation of females who want to get pregnant during the process of in vitro fertilization,
okay,
where doctors take their eggs and then after that they fertilize it using the sperm of the donor, be it the husband or the surrogate donor. And the issue, of course, is that this is a potential human being.
Yeah.
You know, so are we toying with the idea of, you know, playing around with what we call a potential human being? So, of course, there will be...
Just for the purpose of stem cells.
Just the purpose of study, just the purpose of doing research. And, of course, the worry is that, you know, the purpose of creating another human being. So, of course, there will be religious issues. You know, I think barring that, different religions have different definitions of what constitutes already
life.
Life. Mm-hmm. So, but from a moral point of view, you know, is this a potential human being that you are, you know? So some would say yes, you know, some would say no. Until it takes a life of its own, it is not able to live independently, isn't it?
Yeah.
And of course, there are, of course, ethical issues, getting women to donate their eggs, you know, and fertilizing it or making it into an embryonic cell. So the embryonic stem cell would be the one that has the most potential to make a nerve stem cell or to make a liver stem cells. And the issue other than moral implication would be how to make this cell become a nerve cell or become a muscle cell, and later on how to make it express a certain marker, say for instance if you want it to function that way to repair a certain condition, and how to make sure that, you know, it, when it's put into the particular organ that is injured or degenerated that it does what it does.
Okay.
Why should it make, say for instance, if you put it into the brain, why should it make a nerve cell or a dopamine producing cell to cure Parkinson? Why can't it make a bone or a cartilage or even a cancer, what we call a teratoma? And those are the issues. Its potential ability to form tumors, you know, its potential ability to do things which are outside of what we want it to, you know. So there are still issues that we need to understand.
There will be some amount of manipulation. Is that what you're saying?
There will be some amount of manipulation in order to make it become another, to carry another function.
Sure.
All right, and something can go wrong along that way. All right.
Okay.
And of course, the cells get rejected after a while because they do not belong to the patient. All right. So say, for instance, a patient who has a particular nerve disorder, all right, and he receives an embryonic stem cell belonging from another person, of course, it gets rejected. As I said, you know, the human being has this capacity to recognize its own or self from non-self.
The HLA, as you mentioned. Yes. Okay. Mm. Alfred, you have a question.
Hi, good evening, Mira and Doctor.
Good evening.
My question is, Doctor is explaining about embryo stem cells, but what about stem cells from umbilical cord compared with the stem cells from bone marrow? Is there a difference if I use it for treatment purpose, stem cells from umbilical cord and stem cells from bone marrow?
Okay, thank you, Alfred. I think you just explained that. But when you talk about umbilical cord, we have a lot of cord banks. What are we actually doing when we bank a cord? And is there potential for embryonic stem cell applications for that person in the future?
So to get out of this moral and ethical issues of using embryonic stem cells, investigators turn to what we call fetal stem cells. And some of these fetal stem cells are found in the placenta as well as the fetal membranes, all right, and the umbilical cord. Inside the umbilical cord, it is very rich with stem cells. Predominantly, majority of those stem cells are blood stem cells or marrow stem cells. There are also some what we call mesenchymal stem cells, which are made up of connective tissue. That means our cartilage, bone, and muscles. So some people do use these umbilical cord stem cells to repair muscles or repair in the form of research. The amount of other stem cells are really, at the moment, still very limited. So the umbilical cord stem cells that we collect today and that are kept in banks are largely, again, used for hematological malignancies and immune deficiency syndromes, because they are very rich in the blood stem cells. And because these stem cells are so immature, although they express a lot of the HLA systems, they don't have the capacity to really reject. And that's why they're able to overcome these HLA barriers that I mentioned earlier on. So the chance of rejection using umbilical cord cells is less. And so we are able to transplant across the HLA barriers.
Okay, but so far, then you would say it's used mostly for blood disorders.
Still in blood disorders. Blood disorders. Yes.
Okay, mm-hmm. Not so much for anything else.
Those are still in research areas.
Okay, you know, so earlier on, I spoke about how we're taking supplements, which are, you know, animal based, plant based. How does that work?
So
because you said HLA, and I'm trying to put the supplement together with the HLA. You said it has to be a match, you know.
So I hate to disappoint you, Mira, because, you know, you spend so much money buying stem cells and, you know, for cosmetics, for beauty and for health. So, but stem cells are still living cells, so they cannot be maintained in a tube, in a vial. They cannot come in a powder form or inside a vial.
Capsule,
you know, it has to be kept in a living form. So in order to preserve the stem cells and make sure it's still living, we have to add chemical additives and really freeze it to minus 180 degrees. And later on when it's used, we have to thaw it back to 37 to be infused in to the person. So whatever that you are taking at this moment, be it in a capsule, in a vial, in solution forms, I have no doubt that there are no stem cells in it. Whether there are any factors, growth factors or anything, or supplements that make you feel better, you know, that it could be possible. But they're definitely not stem cells.
Okay. Mm. So if it's stem cell, it's placebo, that's what you're saying.
I don't know what is placebo. There may be something in it.
Yeah, there may be something else, right, that's making you feel good. That's a point, actually. I never thought of that. But there are a lot of myths about stem cells, a lot of misconceptions. What would they be?
Sorry?
Misconceptions as far as stem cells are concerned.
Well, a lot of people feel that a lot of people have therapeutic claims, you know, to say stem cells can heal just about anything, whether it can heal mental retardation, cerebral palsy, you know, all sorts of genetic disorders, injuries, and so forth. So I think we have to, as I mentioned earlier on in the program, because stem cells in the early part of its development is not regulated like drugs. So there are a lot of therapeutic claims and a lot of uses, clinical applications in a non-approved situations. So we really need to separate what's facts and what are myths. So I think it's important that, you know, consumers of stem cells or anyone who is asking or requesting for stem cell therapy, I will ask themselves what are really the clinical trials that have taken. Because although there may be science, it needs to be translated to clinical use. So this is what we call clinical translation. So how much research has been done, how objective those research has been, all right, and what are the outcomes, you know, are they measured by an independent source and so forth. So I think the claims that stem cells can do a lot of things, I think it's probably limited. We still don't understand which are the best stem cells to use. As I said, the most ready source is still the blood and bone marrow stem cells. So a lot of investigators use these stem cells for other purposes.
Why is it such a challenge to understand the stem cell?
Because we have no scientific proof in real life that these stem cells really, when put into the body, it is still there.
Why can't you follow it?
Because there's no system of tracking. All right, that once the cells goes into the body, we are not able to track those cells and say, you know, the cartilage or the muscle or the nerve actually came from these stem cells. So that is the difficulty. In the laboratory, we can say we add chemical substances or growth factors to the stem cells and they become a muscle. It looks like a muscle. But we have no proof that in a clinical, when they go into the body, they behave like a muscle. Secondly, is that if you want stem cells to repair nerves, and even though it can differentiate or make nerves, how do we know that, you know, it is actually the whole nervous system is really it's like a team player. It is able to conduct electricity, and then after that goes to transmit these impulses to move a particular muscle. We really don't know whether these stem cells are really working in a coordinated fashion to be able to amalgamate itself into the system to do a certain function. So there's still a lot of work to be done. You know, I think it's not adequate to just do some preclinical tests to add a few substances and say that, you know, it looks like now a muscle. But we have to see that actually it integrates itself into the body and carries a certain function, like transmitted nerve impulses or transmitting electricity or contracts like a muscle. We still don't have that. So we have clinical outcomes to say that there is some improvement. You know, whether these clinical outcomes are objective and whether it is just other substances, you know, some growth factors or some healing properties that comes that is the result of the stem cells or secreted by the stem cells that is really helping in the healing. So there's still a lot of work to be done.
A lot of work by the sounds of it. Yes. Absolutely. We are discussing stem cells. If you have a question, give us a call. The number is 0377 109000. You can tweet BFM Radio or WhatsApp 018-789-8899. I think Dr. Chang, I think you just killed a lot of our beliefs about stem cells and how it's helping our health in general, actually. I will admit I did take some many, many years ago, and a doctor just said to me it was a placebo effect. It couldn't have been the case, really. So I'm sure you've had some experience, so give us a call and just share it with us. It's you know, interesting. Then we can dissect it and see where the possibilities are. That's coming up next after on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasodhi. That's Dr. Chang Kian Meng, consultant hematologist from Sunway Medical Center, in the studio with me. Let me just correct. He's joining them next month. We are discussing the potential uses of stem cells. And, you know, we have a question from Sean. Sean says, I will be having an operation next week to repair my knee where my ACL and meniscus are damaged. It will stem cells from the bone marrow. Will that help in any way? I'm 31 years of age.
You're going to get me into trouble because I'm still in the hospital ampang and Ministry of Health. So
and part of the Ethics Committee at the Ministry of Health as well.
So just before I answer the question, coming back to drug approvals, we have preclinical testing and then we have clinical testing. And in clinical testing, we have what we call phase one trials, where we test it in normal volunteers, human volunteers. Then we have phase two, which are limited clinical studies. And then finally, we have phase three, which is done in thousands of populations across different hospitals in different countries before a drug is licensed. So coming back to the use of bone marrow and blood stem cells in the repair of cartilage injury, I must say that there's a lot of promising research in this area. And there are some single center phase two trials that show some promising improvement in cartilage healing properties. It's still difficult for me to answer the question pending large phase three trials. I would suggest that if it's done, it's done in a properly controlled manner possibly in a research setting to see whether it works. There are some phase two trials to say that it does work, but we still need larger data from different hospitals, different populations, and multi-countries.
So basically you're saying, Sean, his stem cells from the bone marrow is not going to help with his knee.
There are some initial results now to say that, you know, it does promote the recovery faster, you know, and help in cartilage healing. But for me to say for sure, you know, I think we still have to wait for a few more years to look at phase three data.
Okay. Mm. Question from Neto. He says, should we store our umbilical cord stem cell now or take it from bone marrow only when needed?
So there's been a lot of... For the 10 years ago, when first umbilical cord was found to have a lot of blood stem cells, a lot of industries moved towards, commercial entities moved towards storing the stem cells with the promise that these stem cells can be used in the future in case the child gets leukemia or gets any blood or genetic disorders. Most of this has not... borne out in the sense that, first of all, if we have leukemia or we have genetic disorders or we have any blood problems, we would it is likely that our stem cells are already defective. So we likely would not want to use back our own umbilical cord cells that we have stored years ago. If we have another match, we would prefer someone whose stem cells are not defective. So I think for this moment, if we were to store umbilical cord cells, I think its main use is predominantly for those patients with leukemias whereby they don't have a sibling donor. So, you know, those cells can be used for them because they don't need stringent matching. But for private cord banking at this moment, its uses are limited.
Okay. Mm. What would it be expensive to do treatment on stem cells for kneecaps? And what's the percentage of success? See, everybody's going for the knee, Dr. Chang. We all have knee issues.
Yeah, we all have knee issues. And, from my point of view, I hope it does because, you know, it will heal my knee problem. I think there's a lot of potential. There is, as I said, there is this group of cells known as mesenchymal stem cells, whose function are to make connective tissue, which is our ligaments, our cartilage, and muscles. And some of these mesenchymal stem cells are found inside the bone marrow and in our peripheral blood, as well as the umbilical cord blood. So potentially, these are the cells that perhaps may help in the healing of cartilage. But as I said, you know, while the preclinical testing and the phase one and phase two data are compelling, for us to say with any certainty that that it works, that there are no long-term side effects, we have to wait for very large studies. So, we still have to wait for some time.
Okay. Alexandra, you have a question?
I want to ask, because if I would deliver in government sector,
yes,
okay, the MO, which is the medical officer or doctor, will not actually help me to collect my baby's cord blood. Unlike, you have to deliver in private sector in order for the doctor to help us to collect. Why is it in government they cannot actually help us to collect our baby's cord blood themselves?
Okay, thank you very much, Alexandra. So, she got the perfect person here.
So the collection of the umbilical cord requires some degree of training and expertise. The cells, the minute the baby is delivered, the placenta from the umbilical cord, and which is attached to the placenta, has to be cannulated, and that blood has to be collected straight away and then transported to a blood bank facility or cord blood facility that has the capability to collect, to freeze those cells, to process and freeze those cells. So from the government setting at this moment, we are not embarking on private banking, so it's a public banking. So there is a public blood cord blood bank in the Pusat Darah Negara or our National Transfusion Center. Their collection facilities are available in only a few hospitals. So if you are interested, to collect your umbilical cord for public use, you can contact them to see which are the facilities that you can deliver at, so that you know there are trained personnel on site when you deliver to collect those stem cells.
What's so difficult about collecting it?
I think it's more like logistics, to have a person there to be cannulating, taking the blood, and that blood has to be transported. The process itself is not difficult, but it's just arranging the logistics, because as you know, delivery can take place at any time of the day. So you need to have someone on call, you know, someone who's trained and someone to you know, so it's more like a logistic issue.
Okay, to be sent to the National Blood Bank.
But that is for public use and not for private okay. Banking.
All right then. What excites you most about stem cell research at the moment?
First of all, I think we still need to learn a lot about stem cell transplantation, even in the bone marrow setting, because we still grapple with issues of rejection. So I think if that can be reduced, I think that is that would be the best. Of course, in the issue of regenerative medicine, is to identify which group of cells that has the most potential to be used for regeneration or repair. And we talk about embryonic stem cells because embryonic stem cells have moral and ethical implications. But you know, over the last 10 years, researchers have found that even our adult stem cells, say, are the skin cells, you know, the skin cells, the skin fibroblasts, if given a certain manipulation to its gene, it can function like an embryonic cell. This is what we call induced pluripotent stem cells. That means even our skin cells can be programmed, reprogrammed to behave like an embryonic stem cell.
Wow.
So yes, and so that takes away, number one, the ethical issue of using embryonic stem cells. The other thing is that it also takes away the issue of rejection, because it is from your own cell. So imagine that if I can take a bit of your skin, you know, and I take the skin cells and I reprogram it to become an embryonic cell, and then from there I make it become a nerve cell or muscle cell and so forth, and use it for repair back to the patient. So this is a personalized treatment using your own stem cells.
Yes, ideally that would be the best, isn't it?
Yes, rather than using someone else's embryonic cells, whereby we have to have this issue of rejection and taking anti-rejection pills.
How far away are we from any sort of development in that area?
Currently is still in research. I think it's gone out of preclinical testing now to a very early clinical phase.
Okay, fantastic. Today we saw an article where scientists have created an expanded potential stem cells for the first time to produce all three blastocyte stem cells, embryonic, placenta, and yolk sac. Whatever that means, Dr. Chang, I'm just reading it straight from the paper. What does that mean?
So really,
is that a big development at all?
Well, not really. Really, it comes under the realm of embryonic stem cells. The embryonic stem cells that we are using actually is a little bit more mature, whereby it's formed what we call a blastocyst, a ball-like structure. The cell that you are referring to is really the very early phase of that cell, because that is the most early embryonic stem cell that is able to create the placenta as well as the blastocyst, which ultimately will implant into the placenta. And with that, I think we'll be able to understand issues of abortion and things like regeneration and so forth. It's just it's a more immature form of embryonic stem cell.
So now if someone were to come and tell me, you know, you should do this stem cell, whatever, it works, what are some key questions I should be asking them?
Well, first of all, I think you should be very suspicious if, you know, someone says these stem cells can heal a myriad of disorders. You know, it's just like having a pill that can cure every condition, every disease. So I think I'm sure stem cells cannot do that. Secondly, is that, you know, to see, you know, how the amount of research that has taken. I would say that current stem cells today are regulated. When I said it wasn't regulated many years ago, when it first started out, it was hard to figure out how to regulate it. Today, it requires a drug regulatory agency to regulate it for clinical application. So if you are to take part in this sort of stem cell therapy to see whether it is either has been licensed for use, and if it's not licensed for use, whether it is in a research setting, and if it's in a research setting, whether there's an oversight, there's a higher committee that has provided a scientific oversight for that particular research, and whether it has gone through an ethical board like an MREC. If it does, then it's okay.
When you talk about the knee, there's something called PRP. Is that something very different?
PRP is platelet-rich plasma. Yes, it's very different.
It's not a stem cell. It's often mistaken as a stem cell.
Yes.
Okay, fantastic. So, I mean, my takeaway is the stem cell is the mother of all cells, and that's where it all begins, really.
Yes.
The other thing is, for the moment, if you based on what you've said, the only potential for stem cells application at the moment is for leukemias, blood disorders, and even then from the bone marrow specifically.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Even then it's a bit complicated, but, you know, if you get the right donor, then there's a possibility that it works. Okay, would you have a message for us?
I think there's a lot of hype about stem cells. Stem cells have a lot of potential, but, you know, I understand that, you know, many of us have, some of us are in desperate situations. We have conditions or illnesses whereby, you know, there is no cure and so forth. So I think in desperation, we turn to stem cells. But I think we still be very cautious because there may be dangers associated with stem cells. But I think keep a lookout. I think it's a very exciting area of development. Last time we talked about T cells, this time we talked about stem cells. So it will take another 10 years or so before hopefully something, comes out of this, especially in neurodegenerative disorders like Parkinson's and so forth, right?
Okay. Mm-hmm. You think when I'm old, by that time we'd have something?
Hopefully for all of us.
10 years, you're very optimistic. Thank you very much for joining us today. That's Dr. Chan Kyung Min, a consultant hematologist from Sunway Medical Center, speaking to us about stem cells on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.